Entrepreneurship is something you practice. Like, you don't have to ask for permission. By asking a good question, you're actually establishing credibility.
I want to build a world that is allergy-free. It's a pretty bold statement. And it's exactly what fueled the journey of Akash Shah, the co-founder and CEO of Windly. Welcome to Venture Visionaries, where we dive into the stories shaping the leaders of tomorrow. I'm your host, Thomas Igeme, and today I'm excited to introduce you to Akash's journey. Akash's company, Windly, is a groundbreaking telehealth platform that is revolutionizing allergy treatment. And his journey is just as inspiring as his company. From navigating the intersection of technology and healthcare to building a company that is empowering patients to live allergy-free, Akash's story is one to follow. In our episode today, Akash shares the pivotal moments that shaped his entrepreneurial journey. From lessons he learned in childhood to the transformative discovery that sparked the creation of Windly. We're going to explore the cultural differences between tech and healthcare, the operational challenges of merging these worlds, and the role of AI in shaping the future of telehealth. Whether you're a leader in tech, healthcare, or an aspiring entrepreneur, this conversation is packed with insights to inspire and guide you. Let's get started. Here at Venture Visionaries, we often like to start at the beginning with the belief that the entrepreneurship journey doesn't start at the start of a company, but often much earlier for many founders. And so I'm really curious, was there a defining experience or mentor in your career who first steered you towards entrepreneurship?
Absolutely. I think one thing I've learned recently is entrepreneurship is something you practice. It's just something you do. It's not a binary. I think I learned from my parents from a very early age that you can change things around you. And if you push that to its, not as extreme, but like if you just keep trying to make change and affect the world around you, you eventually realize that, oh no, I need money to keep affecting change. Well, if you need money, you got to figure out how to make that money. And it's a lot of times a business, or specifically like figuring out some sort of cash flow, is how you switch from just being like a tinker to being a quote unquote entrepreneur. Even though the behaviors are effectively the same, you're trying to try something out to make something better. And what you're telling yourself is like, well, the constraint is money. I guess I got to figure out how to make money. For me, initially, I thought like, oh, it's because I saw The Social Network and I got really into it. You know, I was like, wow, I'm a nerd. And this person who's portrayed as a nerd is really cool now. So that was me in middle school and high school. Yeah. But as I've grown, I've really realized these were behaviors which I was lucky to have modeled for me by my mother and father, both the grit and the determination of being willing to just keep going at it. And then also saying like, it's okay to try and fail. My father was a doctor in private practice. And so I would see, okay, we're going to open up a new office. Okay, it's an hour away. Guess we're driving on a Saturday after my, you know, morning soccer game to go and build the furniture that goes inside of this practice, because that's just what you have to do. There are people out there who'd say like, wow, you shouldn't do that. If you're the boss, why are you building the furniture? And then there's also people who would say, if you're the boss, you have to build the furniture. So that's kind of how I've realized that's like what's brought me here.
And was that the kind of boss you describe yourself as? The one who builds the furniture?
Oh God, I build too much furniture, man. It's difficult because like I have found that in the very, very early stages, when you're going from zero to one customer and then one to 10 customers, there's so little repetition that it's probably impossible to hire for that role, right? You'd just be hiring someone else to do everything. That's not a hire. That's like either an assistant or it's just a founder. Like those are, those are the two names for that. It ends up being that as soon as you get good at something, you kind of have to give it away and you're constantly facing new challenges. And then also, if there are projects which aren't big enough to give away, it's a choice. You're like, okay, I hired an expert salesperson. Do I really want to take them off of doing sales for a little bit so that they can help with marketing copy? Or am I the one who just has to get good at marketing copy? So yeah, I build a lot of furniture.
One thing about your background is you have a background in computer science, which is pretty traditional for a tech founder. You also studied cognitive science as well. I'm really curious about what you think you got from each of those in terms of how you think about knowledge acquisition or company building.
I went to the University of Virginia. I grew up in a small town in Virginia, and UVA is an incredible school, and I'm lucky to be in state for it. At the time, if you were in the liberal arts college, which is what I went into because I didn't know there was a difference. Like, I didn't know universities had different schools and different programs. That's okay. I was in the college and you couldn't get into a computer science program. I also didn't know at the time that like you can just teach yourself things. I thought you had to go through the computer science program to become a like software engineer. But I saw that the cognitive science major would let you take a few computer science courses because cognitive science was like a study of thought, both human and artificial, and like how it forms. Mm. I was able to make enough friends with the administration. And like, I wouldn't say I was a great student, but I was a personable student that I was able to identify how to get a computer science degree, even though I was in the liberal arts college. Now I hear that the computer science program is like one of the largest majors across the entire school. So I think they've opened it up, which I think is great. I think programming is something everyone should dip their toes into.
You are the founder of Windly, but this is not your first startup. You had some previous startup experiences before. I'm curious what you felt you learned from those. And what was the moment where you felt it's time for me to do it on my own?
I think what's incredible is like, if we say that entrepreneurship is a practice, you can start doing a lot of things very early in life. You don't have to start doing something after you graduate college. Like, you don't have to ask for permission. For example, we see all of these teenagers on TikTok. Do you know how good our movies are going to be in 15 years when we have like a 10-year-old who has been making films for 15 years suddenly become a director at the age of 25? You learn all the time. So when you say, yeah, Windly wasn't my first go round, it's because I had kept practicing. I'd kept learning. In high school and middle school, I'd help out with my local community center and help them kind of launch a fundraising event, right? Mm-hmm. So you kind of see how to will something into place. Then I myself had tried to do a few services. Specifically, there was one which was turning VHS tapes into DVDs. Mm-hmm. I will not elaborate further on what a VHS tape or a DVD is for the audience. And those were false starts, but that's okay, because like they were starts. I took my first serious stab at it at a company called Fluency. This was every college student's standard thing, which is college students try to solve college student problems because that's all they know. Mm. So I thought I could teach students how to study better. And I got slapped. I got slapped with reality that college students don't want to study. Crazy. I know. Who would have thought? And so that was a learning, right? You can't change behavior. Sometimes what people say and what they do is going to differ. Probably you want to be the customer of your own company a little bit. Like, you want to at least understand, like, I wasn't studying any better. My grades weren't going up. So, but it was a challenge. Got exposure. And after that, I went and worked at two startups, which were both acquired. What got me to Windly was after some point, it naturally became just something I did of like staying on top of trends, seeing where I could build something just like for a personal need. I had horrible, horrible allergies, Thomas. Like, I couldn't breathe for so much of my life. I thought you only were supposed to have one nostril open. Just thought that's what was supposed to be the case. I'm complaining to my cousin about this, and he's like, that's not true. And he's like, I can fix you, because he was a doctor. We jumped through a bunch of hoops because I was in New York City. He's in Colorado to get me treated. And I was like, this is amazing. I can breathe. When you can't breathe, you're literally dying. I was basically at 50% capacity for so long. I feel like those scenes in movies where the superhero is like held down by weights and then suddenly they're shed. That's what I felt like. So this was life-changing for me. I do the thing that everyone does when they have an incredible health experience. You sell it to your wife. She got her sister on it. And so now I'm like, three people in my family have been treated. This feels like something. And it didn't make sense to me why I hadn't heard about it. So I just kept digging and digging and digging. And eventually we realized that like, maybe this is worth continuing to explore. And that's how we got started here. It comes from practice, basically, and just being open to opportunities.
What was the point that you realized this wasn't just about setting up a bunch of in-person practices, but moving into an online telehealth platform?
We launched during 2020, and it was very difficult to do in-person things in 2020. Additionally, he was in Denver and I was in New York. For the amount of risks we were taking, the outcome needed to make sense. You don't want to take a lot of risks for building like $1 million a year business. That's not necessarily worth it. But if I'm asking a surgeon to quit his job, it's got to be compelling. We wanted to go after something really big. We saw that the constraint to making this big was access. And so telehealth addresses that access problem first and foremost. So we kind of sat and looked at like, we need this to be big. What needs to be true for it to be big? That's what like drove us towards telehealth. Also, people just expect telehealth now. So it was probably the right move.
Yeah. How do you succinctly define what Windley is trying to do in the world and who it is doing it for?
You got me so excited telling my story. I forgot to do the pitch. Windley gives you permanent allergy relief. If you want a cat, but you're allergic, if you are locked in your house in the spring because Zyrtec and Claritin just don't do it for you, if you feel like I can't breathe and I don't know why and I'm congested all the time and I have brain fog, you need us. You need Windley. And what we're going to do is we're going to set you up with a doctor's visit and we're going to get you on our treatment plan where we're going to identify exactly what you're allergic to. And then we're going to fix your immune system and stop it from reacting to your allergy triggers. And the way this happens is through exposing your body to small amounts of what you're allergic to. It's an exposure therapy. It's actually what you would get at an allergist's office. You would get the same exposure therapy. We just made it much, much, much more convenient in allowing you to do it from home.
Right now, as you're starting, who do you find is the kind of ideal customer profile or who's most excited about this today? And who do you hope is excited about this tomorrow?
There is a solid and steady stream of customers who are boyfriends referred to us by their girlfriends because the girlfriends have a cat. We also see a lot of parents who want to make sure that their children are able to grow up without allergies and the accompanying asthma, which can develop. And so they're investing in their kids' health. You know, anyone who allergies is like a pressing and large concern, which is 100 million people in America have allergies. It's a large market. The people who I want to get excited about this is like, it is wild to me. I do not understand why we have allowed allergies to exist. In America, we have made it very easy to get your teeth straightened out. We've made it very easy for you to get clear skin. These are like small frustrations which just don't need to exist. And allergies aren't even a small frustration. When you can't breathe, you're operating at half of your capacity. I think what's going to happen is in 10 years, antihistamines, people are going to be like, what's a Zyrtec? I don't need a Zyrtec because I tried out Windley and it fixed me so deeply that I don't even worry about managing my allergies. I just don't have them anymore. Like, why do we choose to manage a chronic condition instead of fix the root cause?
What were some of the biggest operational challenges in getting Windley off the ground? And how did you guys overcome them?
The biggest one from day zero was, there's a lot of single state medical practices. What does a multi-state medical practice look like? How do you go national? We solved that by asking a lot of people that exact question. It is incredible how people are willing to give you their time when you ask a well-formed question that shows that you have given it thought. For example, an email or LinkedIn message wouldn't be like, hey, I'm Akash. I want to fix allergies forever. Can I talk to you? Right? That's not a helpful thing. But if I say something along the lines of like, hi, I'm Akash. I want to fix allergies forever by launching a national telehealth practice. These are the challenges which I have faced, which is we're in Colorado. We're trying to expand, but we only have one doctor with one license. And there's a lot of complexity around what's known as professional corporations. What's the unlock that I'm missing? By asking a good question, you're actually establishing credibility that makes people want to help you. And then here's the secret. You tell people, you send them an email 2 weeks later after you've applied that advice, they're fans of yours for life. There is no bigger rush that I have experienced than when I give advice. And then 2 weeks later, someone's like, hey, you helped a lot and you were right. Tactically, it was like finding out how to get that knowledge which was hidden out. And then what is really interesting is, like, for many, 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 many things in the world, for the probably 99.9% of things, there's like a playbook. It's just not known. Mm-hmm. And the playbook here was get a few more doctors, get their licenses, establish what's known as a MSOPC structure. See, we're getting into the legalese. But what's important to take away is there was an answer. The way I got that answer was by finding the right people to ask a good credibility building question to.
Healthcare in America is an incredibly complex behemoth to figure out how to navigate. Growing a startup is, I wouldn't say equally complex. In one way, some ways, I might say it's simpler, but it is also has its own rules of trade and norms and ways of interacting that are completely different. There are many ways in which those differences kind of manifest themselves, but one of the biggest ways is just in the culture. I'm a startup founder. My sister is a doctor. I would say we have never found anything similar in terms of the cultures of the places where we have worked. I'm curious what that culture mix looks like for you guys at Windley. How do you think of yourself straddling between those two worlds?
First and foremost, we're a small business and a startup. That's the most important identity. There's more similarities in like a local doctor's office, private practice, and like a small business and a startup than like between some multi-state behemoth and us. That was the first thing, is like recognizing those similarities which did exist. Then it was really identifying, well, where do we need to meet in the middle? I work in tech startups. I was taught by some blessed person who sat with me and was like, you're a fool. Here's how you need to behave, how to send emails and how to manage an inbox and manage a calendar. That was just part of my like finishing school, so to speak.
Yeah.
They don't teach you that in med school or in residency because they're too busy teaching you how to keep people alive. It is not often a doctor's responsibility to manage their inbox. And especially you're in the ER. There's no circling back in the ER, okay? There's no like vacation out of office reminder. It was identifying, look, there are strengths that we have from having a grounding in medicine. How do we surface those strengths? How do we teach the skills that we need to, you know, just run the business and operate? How do we make all of it easy? For example, we have Slack. Some people are great at daily Slack updates in a written form because they've spent like a decade of their life getting good at it and learning how to communicate with a team and superiors or whatever. I realized people were doing great in like telling me what they were doing, but they were having difficulty putting it in writing. Just record a voice note, make it easier. Imagine you're just on a phone call with me, open up Slack, hit that voice note button and let me know what's going on. And so that's like a very tactical example of like trying to meet in the middle. I don't actually want to train a doctor to be a tech executive. I don't want to diminish what made my team so special and I brought them on. I don't need to like squish them into a certain mold. Instead, I want to let them excel in this new environment. I need to shape the behaviors that I incentivize to allow them to do that. The flip side, by the way, sometimes in tech, we can be a little lax. We can be a little casual, especially in the startup world. That's just not how business is done in medicine. You're a little more buttoned up because there are regulations. There are people who care a lot about those regulations, and you shouldn't make jokes about things that you shouldn't make jokes about. So these are kind of the cultural norms kind of coming together. And then we decide what we want to keep, and then we decide what we want to let go of.
One of the ways that the cultural difference between like an attention to truly getting it right because of the stakes in healthcare and truly actually moving really fast because of the stakes in the startup world, it's kind of often a presentation of the dichotomy between a drive for innovation on one hand and personal, truly patient-centered experience on the other. I think it's very clear from both talking to you and my research that Windley is aiming for both. You're not trying to give up on innovation, but you're also not trying to give up on a personal, patient-centered experience. Have you found those two goals to be in conflict at all?
I've been in the American healthcare system for 30 years, and I don't feel like it's a patient-centered experience. There's what people say, and then there's the actions and expectations and commitments you make. If we say to our patients, that they matter to us. And then we demonstrate to our patients that they matter to us by setting fair expectations and meeting those expectations and building that trust. And then culturally, I say, we build trust and we do not break it. Then now everyone is aligned. We're doing what's best for our customers. We're doing what's best for our patients. And everyone understands how we make that happen. Now we're moving fast towards building trust. Now we're saying we don't break trust just because we want to move fast. That applies outside of tech, too. Like that applies outside of healthcare. It can be presented as a dichotomy, but I don't see any tension there. The tension with the moving fast comes more from having to have compliance. This isn't just a software startup that's selling a better way to send photos or whatever. This is real medicine. And so that just means sometimes Duolingo does some wild stuff out there.
Yeah.
And we just can't. And that's okay because that's just where we are. But I don't think people want us to be like fun and unhinged like Duolingo. Maybe a little frustration with like having to deal with compliance. Everyone understands it's all there for a good reason. Mm. And we find ways to make sure everyone understands what to do.
It seems like your family has made the choice to be in business together multiple times, whether it was you helping your dad set things up as a kid or now you working with your cousin. How do you navigate what is challenging about that? And do you see any unique advantages that you get by being able to build business with family?
I'm incredibly grateful to have the opportunity to build a company with family and someone, especially someone who I'm so close to. Mm. And that's because I can always trust that regardless of our professional disagreements, we are coming from the same place and we both want the same outcome. And it is a deep and personal foundation, which is unshakable. There is no co-founder breakup possible here. And when you decide to start something, your first partner, your first person you decide to like do it with, whether it's your personal life, whether it's a band, whether it's, you know, a business, there's no bigger decision. The amount of energy you lose when you can't trust your partner will kill you in whatever you try to do. The flip side is like, if you have a phenomenal partner, I don't worry about the medicine because I have one of the best doctors at what he does, incredibly credentialed and celebrated by other doctors in this industry. So I know for a fact that that's just handled. He does the same thing with me because he'll say it with me. He's like, oh yeah, well, how's the tech going? I'm like, it's going. Okay, cool. So that is a blessing that we have. At the same time, there is a familiarity that comes from being family that would not exist if we had started as professional acquaintances.
You know, your team has grown. It's no longer just the two of you. How, as you have expanded the Windley team, have you thought about keeping the organization mission aligned?
When I think about our mission and when I think about alignment, it's a function of communication. I think very few people in the world, effectively nobody, wants to do bad work. Maybe I'm a charitable man. Coming from that place, what is required to enable people to do good work? They need to know what they need to do, and they need to be able to spend their time doing those things. Nothing else really matters. So for me, it's about repeating our mission very clearly and very explicitly over and over and making it unquestionable what needs to happen today, this week, this month, and this year for us to be successful. For me, that's like all it comes down to. Recently, I've been telling my team that I've been removing barnacles from them. I went to a wedding in Charleston and they have a lot of ships and I learned about barnacles. It's a whole thing.
Okay. Are there any other trends that you see shaping the future of allergy treatment or that you feel like you and your team are watching closely?
The largest trends. So I would say telehealth is actually people want convenience. So that's the first one. Telehealth stuff shipped to them, high availability, convenience wins. That's a change in how people are behaving. Following that, there is a inevitable rise in allergies, both from as our like personal ecosystems change, we're inside a little more. We've gotten better at like purifying our air and it's just like things are just better around us. But then as the world has gotten warmer, we've seen that there's longer pollen seasons. So there's just more and greater pollen in the air. So allergy seasons are longer and times which were previously not allergy seasons, such as the dry seasons where you just didn't have a lot of plants alive, are becoming allergy seasons because of wildfire smoke and smog. Mm-hmm. So just the amount of time that people are worried about allergies, it's not just March, April, May. We're actually seeing allergy season starts in Texas in December and goes until August. That's not a season. That's like the year. That's a very large trend. And I think the last trend is access. And this is a little different from convenience. So convenience is like, make it easy for me as a individual to do it when and where I want it. So that's like a demand side. Access is a supply side. Like, how do we increase the number of allergists, period? So we have seen that the number of allergists has not grown enough to keep up with the sheer number of patients, right? We're seeing the number of patients kind of double every 10, 15 years. We're not doubling the number of allergists. With that being the case, we need to find a way to unlock a lot more expertise and train up a lot more people, or make it so an individual doctor can see more than 15 to 20 people in a day.
One trend you didn't mention that is all over the place in popular media is AI. I'm curious if AI generally, or generative AI specifically, is playing a role in how you're thinking about Windley right now, and why or why not?
Yeah, AI is a huge part of what I'm thinking about because it's too good to ignore, but it's also not so great that it's an easy drop-in fix. Ironically, it's a lot like telehealth 5 or 6 years ago. It's in the early stages. We're seeing some stuff happening, but people might have to jump through hoops. People might have to deal with some frustrations today. But I think in 5, 10 years, it's just going to be a part of how we do work. The first smartphone came out in 2007 with the iPhone. It's been 15 years and there are doctor's offices which are tablet and smartphone only. So even a slow moving industry like healthcare adopts a technology in 15 years. I think it's inevitable. The things that we have to keep an eye on are, how do you use generative AI to keep the parts of healthcare that we like and give away the parts of healthcare that we don't like? So the parts of healthcare that we like are having an expert focus on you and listen to you. The parts of healthcare we don't like is all the paperwork. I see it as all the administrative tasks are ripe for AI to help superpower or give away. And then we want to enable our providers to do what they do best, which is spend time with patients. And however AI enables that to happen will be good. The risks, of course, are, this is valuable and this is health information. We don't want to be careless with it. And then maybe AI can make something up and hallucinate if you're asking it about what shirt should I buy. You can't do that in healthcare. That's how I look at it.
I'm curious if you could go back and give your younger self one piece of advice before starting Windley. What would it be and why?
Stay focused and move fast. That's two pieces of advice. I'm sorry. They're like related, because focus comes from moving fast. There's so many distractions. It's so easy to let yourself become distracted and not realize it. So staying focused is what you want to happen. And the way you make it happen is by moving fast. If you're moving 10 miles an hour towards the end of your journey, well, you're not really going to be moving. But if you're moving 100, 200 miles an hour towards the end of your journey, it's hard to like do anything else except move fast towards where you're going.
You know, that's interesting. I like that because I think it's counter actually to a lot of the ways that we think about moving fast. Certainly when I think about moving fast, I think about being less in control, the inability to be as deliberate. And so speed, but actually a reduction in precision about where that speed is going. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you move fast with focus.
The way we do it is we pick what we want to do. There is a company goal. We want to double our revenue in the next year. And then my co-founder and I will say, okay, what can we do to make that happen? Are these good ideas? Okay, great. We have our good ideas. What needs to happen this week for us to take the first step towards those good ideas? So for example, if I want to double our revenue, okay, we need to expand into 10 more states. Okay, then the thing that has to happen this week is I need to talk to 10 doctors who are licensed in those states the thing that has to happen in the next 30 minutes. I need to like hit up my Rolodex and see who I know. By breaking down this mountain into a very small first step, open up your Rolodex, find doctors to talk to, you start building that momentum. If you're just constantly saying, okay, this is my next step, this is my next step, I'm making sure that I'm going towards what the destination I set, doubling revenue or increasing number of states that we're in, that's your moving fast. And then that's your focus. I think it's very important to have the broad view. And I think it's very important to have the, what do I do today or this week view? And I think you have to trust yourself that the stuff in between will take care of itself.
What are you most excited about as you look ahead to Wendy's future?
Every time I hear from a patient that they are experiencing their life more because of what we've been able to do for them, it is an incredible moment. I'm able to move in with my girlfriend because now I'm not allergic to her cats. My kids are able to play soccer at school because now they're not allergic to the grass in spring. The inevitability of peanut allergies, where it's like, now I'm not worried about my kid when they go have Halloween candy because I know that peanuts are safe for them now. There is so much we are giving to patients. We're giving them their life back by letting them breathe better and not worry. I just want more and more people to experience this. So what I'm most excited about is going from thousands of patients to millions of patients. That's what I'm most excited about. If you have bad allergies, Wendly.com, Wendly.com. I'll set you up with one of our doctors. If you have complaints or frustrations, just email me, akash@wendly.com. And if you just want to follow along and like, you know, you think I have interesting things to say, you can find me on LinkedIn.
Thank you for tuning in to this enlightening conversation with Akash Shah, CEO of Wendly. From the importance of grit and determination to the innovative ways telehealth is making healthcare more accessible, Akash's journey reminds me of the power of vision and perseverance in driving meaningful change. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe to Venture Visionaries for more stories of leaders reshaping industries. And make sure to visit Wendly.com to learn more about their mission to transform allergy care. And as always, stay curious, stay innovative, and keep being you. The world deserves nothing less. See you in the next episode.